Hello and welcome to Cool Sheets,
where we sift through the noise so you don't have to.
You'll hear all about 10 things that we are currently enjoying in our lives.
Each of us has exactly 2 minutes to dive in and tell you about one of the things we've chosen.
It might be a book, an app, a gadget, a place, anything goes.
Don't forget to get all of our show notes on our website, coolsheets.cool.
You can also interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Let's dive into our Cool Sheets.
Hello, everyone. My name is Karen Holman.
And I'm Brian Hart.
And this is Cool Sheets. At least, I think they are. Mine are. Are yours?
Oh, yeah, super cool sheets. This is super cool sheets.
Oh, this is not. Oh, I thought
not
this was
even
cool
regular.
Sheets. No, it's super cool. Super cool. But you have to say it fast.
Yeah.
Super cool. All right. And my first super cool sheet, I'm going to be telling a story, a parable, and this is one of my favorite stories. I know this because it's one that I can actually tell. I kind of have a bad memory for certain things, and retelling jokes is one of them, and retelling stories is another one. But this one I love so much, and it is the story of the Chinese farmer. And the way that this goes, if you have not heard it, is that there was once a Chinese farmer who worked on his farm together with his son, and they had a horse. And one day the horse ran off, and the neighbors came over and said, "Oh, how unlucky for you." And the farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." And the horse did return after a few days. And when it returned, it was followed by a herd of wild horses. And so the neighbors came back over and they said, "Oh, what good luck for you." And the farmer said, "Maybe no. Yes, maybe no." And so then they had all these wild horses. And so the farmer's son was helping to break those wild horses. And when he was doing that, trying to tame them, he fell off and he broke his leg. And his neighbors came over and said, "How unlucky." And the farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." And the story goes on to say that shortly thereafter, there was a neighboring army that was threatening the village nearby. And so the counselors came over to draft any of the young men. And when they came over and they saw that the farmer's son's leg was broken, they passed him over. And so, of course, the neighbors came over and said, "You are so lucky." And guess what the farmer said? "Maybe yes, maybe no." So this is just one of those lovely encapsulated stories that reminds us that super important message that whatever is happening, you don't know whether it's good or bad. And passing judgment isn't always going to be the way you think it is going to be. That's it. That's the story.
You do. That's
sorry.
Funny. You're not. You're throwing me off. All right.
I know. I didn't end like I usually.
Yeah.
Just,
you don't do that.
Anyway. Well, I did though.
Anyway.
I'm
okay. Did I do that?
I don't know. Okay. So I will now wrap it up as I should have. The story of the Chinese farmer. Sorry about that. I apologize.
I'm a creature of habit.
I know.
It's different. I freak out.
I know. Apparently. Especially because this show has rules.
Like two.
I did not follow the rule.
Oh, that's funny. Yes, I know that story and I love that story.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder. I should think about that story more often. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
It's a good one. And we fall into that trap so quickly about, you know, all the time. Everybody does.
Oh.
Even who I've heard the story before and I still do it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So such a great, great reminder.
It's our knee jerk to just go with that. And so the post I'm going to make along with it is Alan Watts telling the story.
Alan Watts
is a former Cool Sheet.
Yes.
And I like him just telling the story.
He can be a Cool Sheet every week, it seems.
Yes, yes.
So good. Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. My first Cool Sheet is a podcast, and it is called Reset by Vox. And I kind of hinted about this a few weeks ago, but I finally got to talk about it. I needed to listen to a few more episodes. I listened to a couple, and I was like, I'm pretty sure Vox is pretty solid, and I've talked about Today Explained before as a Cool Sheet, so this is another one of their podcasts. But this one, it says, every story is a tech story. We live in a world where algorithms drive our interests. Scientists are re-engineering our food supply, and a robot may be your next boss. So these have new episodes every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. So I like the fact that it has a variety of different days, including Sunday. There's a lot of these podcasts that I've been mentioning are Monday through Friday. This one is Sunday, so that's nice. I have now added it to my ever-growing daily rotation. But it's so good. These are a little bit longer, so these are about 20 all the way up to 40 minutes. But they're just great content. They still give you a really good snapshot of kind of what's going on in the world right now, but has that tech bend to it, which, of course, I love. I don't know if every story is a tech story, but every story on this podcast certainly is. Maybe that's what they mean. Some of the episodes include biohacking rules of engagement. So I love biohacking, and I do some myself, but this is about the people that really take it to the extreme, including one guy that got these crazy metal injections into his shin, and he did it by himself, extremely painful. He put it on YouTube or some kind of video and shared it with other biohackers. And actually, this was one of the things that stemmed him almost losing custody with his children because he was a bad example. It got really crazy. I mean, that is crazy, but still, just really wild stuff. There's a whole bunch of other episodes, but I'm out of time. Definitely check out Reset by Vox.
Whoa, I have heard about that, but I've not listened to any yet. So now I'm extra intrigued.
Yeah, it's really good. They talk, like I said, about a lot of things that are really happening all the time right now.
Uh-huh.
Like face recognition. And I didn't know this, that face recognition doesn't work very well for people of color. And it was mostly because of sample size, but then Google tried to fix that, and it really blew up in their face. So another really good episode to listen to.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Spoil it. All kinds of different really good episodes there.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones where every time I know, and this is why it's on my daily rotation, I just know it's going to be interesting for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well-produced, and it's regular.
Yeah.
And like I said before, I'm trying to get away from news because it's so negative. This is another, it kind of keeps you up on current events, but it's a little more positive spin.
Yeah.
It doesn't get political. Although some of these do, of course, but not overly. It's not just talking about trials or.
Yes. It sounds like that's
things.
Not the main point.
Yeah.
Because politics will infuse itself into
sure.
various things.
Sure.
And I like that they have one that comes out on Sundays. I don't know why more people don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you can make it part of your Sunday morning routine or whatever that many people have.
Yeah.
Weekends.
Although I do have now, like three good podcasts that come out on Sundays, which is perfect, though, because a lot of them don't. So, it's cool. It's exciting.
Nice. Okay. My next cool sheet. So at the time of this recording, it is November. Woo! It's November. So we're heading into rainy season here in the Pacific Northwest. And so I wanted to talk about rain barrels. That is something that I am now looking into getting. And I have learned a lot about it since finding out more. And so I wanted to share a little bit about what I've learned and also just say this is a cool sheet. This is something that really anyone can do, regardless of where you live. And so this practice does go way back, as you can imagine. We're talking 4,000 years in the Middle East, and that there is no reason to stop doing it for certain things. Now, municipal water districts, of course, they are chlorinated, and certain things are done to the water to make it so that you can drink it. And so you won't necessarily be creating a rain barrel to be able to drink your water, but there are, of course, many other uses for it. All right, so we can make rain barrels that are as little as $20, so this shouldn't be seen as cost prohibited. Prohibitive. But you can, of course, get fancy with it. And if you did want to collect your own water and then put it through a filtration system, you could drink it. So that is also possible. But this is one of the things, some numbers I wanted to throw out at you so you could listen to this. So 1 inch of rain falling on a 1,000 square foot roof will just that will yield 600 gallons of water. And so just that alone is such a good reason to do it. The rainwater, of course, it doesn't have minerals in it. It's usually soft, and that is actually really good water for watering your flowers and plants and everything in the summer. So there are a lot of things you need to keep in mind when you do this, and I have a great link for how to create one, a rain barrel.
Cool. Gosh, I didn't know. I knew they were important and not used very often, but I didn't know that much water.
It's amazing.
Could be stored and used.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, and okay, so this is why I've actually never considered doing it, because I just imagined that there's a big barrel, you know, like a drum sitting out, and it's collecting a little bit of water, and then maybe you put the lid on it. I didn't realize that actually the way most people do it is you get your roof is huge, and you have all this water on it, and then it's going into the gutters, and you collect it out of the gutters, and then you can use that. I mean, that is one way to do it. That's the most efficient way of doing it, actually. And, of course, depending where you – if you don't own your house or in your apartment, there are other ways to do it. But yeah, that's – once I realized that, it was like, wow, this is amazing.
Gosh, yeah. Especially because, yeah, just water shortage in general – we're a little lucky in the Pacific Northwest. It hasn't gotten too bad,
yeah.
But it's going to. I mean, water is super, super sacred resource.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm always kind of grossed out by the waste that everyone, especially
in the United States, has.
And this would really help for sure. Someday it's probably going to be required.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
You know, that'll all be built in.
Uh-huh.
New development especially, but...
Yeah, and there are financial incentives. If you live in California, Arizona, and Japan, they all have incentives, and that might become more worldwide. Another thing that was really cool that I learned about is that it helps the environment also. If you're collecting the rainwater, it helps in terms of storm drains and runoff of stuff. It's actually helpful in other ways too.
So cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great. My next cool sheet is going to be a YouTube channel. And boy, you're going to really love this one, Karen. It is called Cocktail Chemistry. It's like it was made for you. But somehow I'm reviewing it. But I will share it with you at least. So this is a YouTube channel, and it is a lot like Binging with Babish, which was a former cool sheet of mine. Only this is cocktails. So he's kind of filmed the torso minus his head, just like Binging with Babish. So they obviously, I don't know who came first, but probably Babish, but maybe not. But they're very well produced videos. And just like Binging with Babish, he does a lot of drinks that are recreated from famous TV shows or movies and things like that, like the Forget Me Shot from The Simpsons, the Peppermint Patty from Archer, the Black Yukon Sucker Punch from Twin Peaks, the Pan Galactic Gargle Blaster from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But he also goes into some advanced techniques those are fun, you know, the TV ones are fun. Of course, a lot of them he can't quite replicate because they're, you know, the poisonous gland of a made-up butterfly from another planet. So obviously he can't do all of those, but he does, you know, try to find the most closest thing to that and actually makes them and drinks them. Sometimes varying results there on how tasty it is. And then he will also kind of make them better, which Binging with Babish does. But the advanced techniques are really cool, too. Like, he did cocktail pods, so it was like a gelatinous little pod, like a Tide Pod, only this was like alcohol drinks, which was really cool. You could actually safely consume those if you're over 21. Then things like how to make clear ice, the perfect Moscow Mule, and other really things. Also, his website does have like his equipment list and a cocktail calculator, also very helpful. But definitely check out Cocktail Chemistry.
This sounds awesome. I'm going to go straight on it after this show.
Yep.
Hey, do you recall what he said for clear ice? Because I have a theory, and I'm wondering.
Well, I am going to have that as a future cool sheet
because
it's so important because I've actually looked at it from tons of different angles, and there's never really been one that's worked for me 100%. So as soon as I test it, I've researched two different places, Chef Steps and this website,
cool.
And they both confirm the exact same way
okay.
and how it works and why it works. works.
Okay.
So I'll let you know later.
Awesome. So, well, I'm super fascinated because I've thought about it from a theoretical chemical point of view.
Sure, absolutely.
And but never tried anything, so I can't wait.
Yeah. My guess is you're probably right. But there are some kind of myths out there that, mm-hmm. you know, they say, oh, use hot water or distilled water or this or that. And those are all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Those will always have cloudy ice cubes. And
all
I've
right.
tried all of them. So, yeah.
Cool.
To be continued.
Yeah. All right. Okay. My next cool sheet ties together music and sound, healing and spirituality, I guess, Tibetan singing bowls. And I wanted to share a few things I found about this that are so lovely. One is just a video of people making them in Tibet. It's just incredible watching that. It's a super short video. So that's one of them. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about was first, the tragedy of the history being lost. So because of the 1950s communist Chinese military occupation that went into Tibet, so many things were lost. And one of them were a lot of the history and the stories and a few of the original Tibet, or what were touted as being original or important Tibetan singing bowls in three temples, and only one of them is known to be remaining. So in any case, with this lost history, there were some interviews in the 1980s that were done of Buddhist monks, and they were able to collect what they feel like is reliable information about Tibetan singing bowls. So first, just really quickly, the first ones were estimated to be made out of pure copper over 5,000 years ago. And their purposes, though, I wanted to get into this, is first off for teaching. And so this harkens back to the Buddha, and that the symbol of the bowls is to symbolize the void and that teaching in the Dharma. And so the vibrations are teaching about emptiness and going back to the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism. Another purpose is to gather. And so this is bringing people together and positive energy. And there's some other aspects to it, and transforming and just bringing someone to a higher realm and feeling better. And I think that's what it really comes down to, is many people listen to it and just feel better. And however that happens for different people, I can say personally it happens for me. I love the sound of Tibetan singing bowls.
Oh, gosh, yes. There's just not much that's better than that. And I don't know, yeah, if it's just a trigger from, say, my meditation practices, or, you know, especially when I went in a Vipassana retreat,
mm-hmm.
or what exactly it was, but that chime, yeah, it just instantly calms me down and is very
yeah.
zen and tranquil.
Yeah.
And I love it. It is.
And there are so many different ones.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Yeah.
And they're all just wonderful.
I know. And they all have different meanings and tones, and also the way you play them. And, you know, just
yeah.
the single ding, or it can be the constant sound with them, and you can play different ones together that some people do. And it's amazing.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. I can't wait to even look at more of it. That sounds interesting for sure. Okay. My next cool sheet is an article, kind of a funny one, but it is How Boba Fett Became a Star Wars Icon. And it is by The Ringer. And I bring this up because we just watched The Mandalorian. The first couple episodes came out at the time of this recording, and it did spark. I mean, essentially, Star Wars took a chance on their first live-action TV series since they've bought in the Star Wars franchise, as based on essentially a character that has, I don't know, four lines of dialogue in The Empire Strikes Back, and he dies in a really ridiculous way in Return of the Jedi. But he is so popular by almost everybody that they're basing, like I said, they're basing a whole entire show on his look, even. Not exactly him, but his tribe or the Mandalorians in general. And it's true, as a kid growing up, it was weird. This is probably a whole nother discussion. And maybe not cool sheet, but maybe like therapy or something. But I always liked the bad guys best. So Darth Vader was probably my favorite. Actually, Boba Fett, they were neck and neck. And Boba Fett probably was my favorite. And Darth was probably my second favorite. And then it was like Luke or Han or somebody like that, which is totally silly. But it was all because of the look of them and I guess just like their strength, a little more edgy, obviously, the dark side, quite a bit more edgy in some cases. But Boba Fett especially, he looked so cool. He was very quiet, actually, because he only had four lines of dialogue. It made him more mysterious and made your imagination just go crazy. He was also one of the only ones that could actually outsmart the rebels, you know, was able to follow them and help capture them, which no one else could do, and just intrigued me more. His, you know, the dent in his helmet. He had all these unseen stories that you never knew about. So definitely check out this article, How Boba Fett Became a Star Wars Icon.
Yes, it is really fascinating how, and I will also say, I've talked to people who are like, what's up with Boba Fett? Why do people like him? So there are people on the other side sure. who get annoyed by, I don't know why you would ever get annoyed by that. But anyway, yeah, super interesting. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about the way he died, because I just feel like he would have gotten out of it. Like, he would have, thrown something up or, you know, and so it's just like, what? Really?
I remember as a kid also, because I loved Boba Fett, and then watching that, and I was like, I was angry. Even as a child, I was just like, this is ridiculous. And of course, the entire world that loved Boba Fett was just livid that he died like that. Now, in the comic books that are not canon right now, but he does survive. They show my friend, actually, I didn't know about it, but he like digs in one of the canals of the intestines of the Sarlacc and runs into this area where aliens live underneath and like produce fuel from the Sarlacc's
waste. Oh, there's some sort of symbiotic relationship.
And he like hangs with them for a bit and then later leaves. Like, it's a wild story. So that's probably why they didn't roll with it. But there's all these rumors, and there's even a rumor that he's been spotted in The Mandalorian. So semi-spoiler, a little bit too late.
Interesting.
It's not confirmed, so I don't know. It's just theory right now. So we'll see. Maybe they will finally say, oh, by the way, he is alive or not. I don't know. But it was wild to me that he went out like that. It's like it's the worst death of all time of a powerful character of any movie ever.
Super uneventful, fast, and sort of, I don't know, pathetic, kind of just sort of, what? A weird, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently they needed someone important to die in that scene, and they chose Boba. So anyway, okay, awesome. Yes, anything Star Wars, and I'm on board. Okay, my next cool sheet, I'm going to be talking about something in science, and specifically metal organic frameworks. So these have the acronym MOF, M-O-F, and they're pretty much under the radar, I would say, right now, in terms of common pop culture or pop science. And but they're going to continue to just reveal all the different applications that they're able to have. So let me tell you a little bit about them. So metal organic frameworks. So this is essentially what they are making are cages. And metals are really important in order to be able to hold a cage certain structure. If something is made only out of carbon and oxygen, maybe a couple of the other lighter elements, they tend to be more floppy. And so you really get this nice structure, and you can also change the properties of it because there's so many different metals that are out there. And so what has then happened with these cage-like structure is that people have been investigating different things that they can be used for. And one of them is gas storage and separation. This is really huge in terms of different kinds of energy fuel storage. Liquid separation and purification, which you can imagine is really important for water purification. Also, electrochemical energy storage, again, huge in anything that's energy related. catalysis, which allows you to make any other compound at lower temperatures and pressures. So that's safer and just helps with everything in our society, basically. And also sensing. So that is where you're going in and you're trying to sense, is there a toxic gas nearby or something like that? So there are unbelievable number of applications that are just waiting to be found that have already been found. And so keep your eyes open for metal organic frameworks.
Wow. I don't know if I knew anything about that.
Like I said, it's under the radar.
Yeah.
But really, really cool. One of the things you might actually see it because one of the applications people are looking into are carbon dioxide capture and release. And so it could have to do with anything with either carbon dioxide, like pulling it from the atmosphere and using it for other things, or just helping with carbon emissions.
Oh, nice. I wonder if there's a company that does that. I can't remember if I've talked about them yet. I wonder if that's what they're using.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
So I've thought about that.
Okay, so. Cool. Very cool.
And also they're looking into using them as biomedical micro robots. And they're calling – so they're – because it's metal organic framework MOF, so they're calling them MOF bots, which I think is awesome.
That's pretty great.
Anything that's bot, I don't know. If you can think of something clever, I like that term. Okay.
Very, very cool. I want to circle back one more thing on Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah.
There's the one of the first line that you hear, Darth Vader is walking through this room with all these bounty hunters around. They all look very interesting. But then he says, you know, I want them captured alive. And then he looks at right at Boba Fett and says, no disintegration. And he's like, as you wish. That pays off in The Mandalorian, so it's worth checking out.
That's great.
It was something that as I was putting the show together, I was like, oh, hey, finally.
Yeah. Well, and if you know, if Darth Vader knows you and knows something about you, you must be pretty important.
Yeah.
Darth Vader's not going to bother with any of all the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't. Yeah. He didn't talk to anybody, especially with that. Only Boba. But anyway,
that's great.
Okay, my next cool sheet is a sleep hack. And this is a really good one that you might not have thought about already. And this is essentially not eating before bed. So, and this is also one that I struggle with a lot. You know, if I work really late and I haven't ate all day, I really have to decide, do I skip dinner or eat and then suffer the consequences? And I usually, of course, choose to eat, and I don't eat light enough, and then I suffer for it. Because if you go to bed super hungry, it's hard because then you're uncomfortable and it's hard to fall asleep. But if you eat right before bed, you can have problems with digestion, what they call nighttime heartburn. And also, now that I have my ring that tracks my heart rate and my heart rate variability and all of these stats, every time I don't get a good night's sleep, it knows my resting heart rate occurs really, really late in the evening and goes, did you have a late meal? And it's always right. So even when I feel like I might be sleeping well, my ring calls me out and knows that indeed my heart rate didn't lower until really late that evening, and that's not great for you. So they recommend 2 to 3 hours before bedtime. Also, you can look to foods that do help you sleep, like things with tryptophan in them, of course. Stay away from high foods with a high acid content, like tomatoes, spicy food. Those will also have a bigger likelihood of having a nighttime heartburn. When you lay down, your food just automatically kind of slides, and then it'll reflux into your esophagus. Bad news. Also, avoid alcohol. People think a nightcap's really good, but it's been very proven that it does disrupts your sleep more than it helps. So don't eat right before bed.
Interesting. I'm really good at convincing myself I need to eat before bed. I'll be like, oh, I've heard cereal and milk is, you know, cozy and helps you. And so then I'll like, nom, nom, nom.
Yeah, well, it mentions milk, actually. I didn't get time for it. So I have some other things because it's provides comfort. It's like a comfort mm-hmm. food. Now, it doesn't say cereal because sugar is bad. Mm. Oh, and this is another thing that they mentioned that I think people don't think about. Obviously, caffeine is bad. Yeah. Everybody knows that, but there's caffeine in chocolate, and chocolate mm-hmm. is a big dessert item. So also not good right before sleep. So just something to think about.
Yeah.
And I know when I have, whenever I have like very adamantly not ate before bed, like when I was doing intermittent fasting and things like that, and I would do the skip my dinner portion, I always slept way better when I was on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
Like heads and tails.
Right. Interesting. All right. Well, my last cool sheet, I'm going to be talking about a video. And this was so, well, I started watching this thinking, well, this looks kind of cool. And by the end, I was like, this is so amazing and awesome. So it's called How Obsessive Artists Colorize Old Photos. Okay. I don't like the title of that because by the end of the video, I wasn't there. There was nothing to say that these were obsessive artists. They're just artists. This is their job. They do this. And maybe the term comes from how much time and energy they are putting into doing this. And so these are all the things that I learned about it. Okay, so first off, it was done by Vox, very legit company doing this documentary-ish video. And they focused on one of the artists, so they really got his point of view, but then talked about a lot of different pieces of artwork, and just I learned a lot of things I didn't know about history and culture. So Jordan Lloyd is this London-based artist that they spoke to, who he does a lot of this. So, for example, research that they do. All right, so let's say there is an old photo from 1935 of, say, a man who's sitting there, you know, making something, and there's some advertisements behind him and a bunch of other things. So they will go into looking at each of those advertisements that were there, and one of them was 7-Up. Okay, we all, if you're raised in America and United States, you know what the 7-Up logo looks like. Well, you would automatically color it green. Well, prior to 1962, 7-Up logo was red. And so by doing that research, he was then colorizing that correctly. They would go into, so one of the pictures was a portrait of someone from the Lapland. So that's up in northern Scandinavia. And so he learned about the culture and their beads and the beadwork and what colors were used. He did this for, had to do it for time, had to do it for space, had to do it for all the different aspects to be able to get a photo correctly. The lighting they talk about is fascinating. Really cool video. How obsessive artists colorize old photos.
That's funny, the title too, because yeah. It's kind of a clickbaity.
It is clickbaity.
Title,
it is clickbaity.
Another, but very cool video. Though,
yes.
It sounds like.
Yes. And one of the things that Jordan Lloyd brought up was that there is pushback against it. People are saying, no, this is essentially, this old photo is a piece of art and you're messing with it. Stop it. They don't want it to happen. And he said, yes, absolutely. That is a piece of art. I'm not trying to replace it. He said, this is supplemental to it and they should always be shown side by side. And so he doesn't, you know, he feels like that this is worthwhile, that you can learn a lot from these photos, from about culture, about history. And he feels strongly about it. And he clearly does a good job. And also the time spent. So it takes at least a day, like minimum. But he said he has spent up to a month colorizing
Whoa.
A photo. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
So this is not trivial. This is not like adding lipstick onto a picture of, so this is
absolutely.
The real deal.
Yeah, no, and I've never thought of it as a bad or a replacement either. I've always thought supplement and just my own curiosity. I think it's fascinating, but that's cool that he doesn't want to replace it. That's great.
Yeah.
And that's two mentions for Vox.
Today,
so man.
Good job, Vox.
Good job, Vox. All right. My last cool sheet. Is that true?
It's true.
Whoa.
I know.
We're cruising along today.
Relatively speaking.
Yeah. Right. All right. My last cool sheet is a human, and this human's name is Malcolm Gladwell. And we have talked, actually, I was surprised, only one thing that he's done, and that was a podcast of his called Revisionist History. He could be a cool sheet. I thought about breaking it down because I just read his most recent book, Talking to Strangers, and thought, oh, I could do a whole Cool Sheets episode on each one of his books or him. But I am going to group this into one. Maybe I'll go into other ones later. But right now, just him as a human being, 5-time New York Times bestseller, obviously, on some of those books. So The Tipping Point, Blink, Outliers, What the Dog Saw, David and Goliath, and now Talking to Strangers. I think I've read everyone, maybe not David and Goliath. I thought I have read all of them, but I have to double check on that one. they're all great. It's another one you don't have to, it's not really a series. You can pick up any book, they're nonfiction, and read it, and it's great. I really like the audiobooks because one of the things I like the most about him is his voice, and he always narrates his own books, and he's just a master storyteller in general, but the way that his voice sounds and how he tells the story of his own book, when an author narrates their own story, it's always a little bit better, I think. But combine that with his look or his voice just makes it so much better. Speaking of looks, he has a very distinctive look as well. So if you've seen him, you probably remember what he looks like. He kind of has this fro-ish, and it looks a little unkempt maybe to some people, but I think it's wonderful, and it's his personality. It's kind of become his signature style. He definitely stands out. I don't know if this was pre-planned or not, but it works, and it's fantastic. So I first read The Tipping Point, and it changed my life and the way I look at things, and so do all the rest of his books. I'm running out of time. It's Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes, I will say his impact has been enormous, more than yes. anyone else. And I say this just from me, having people come to me and saying, oh my gosh, have you read this book? And different people from every realm of my life. And it's almost like it could have been a different person writing each one of those books. And it turns out it's the same person writing all these
mind-blowing
different books that are so powerful and impactful. It's amazing.
Yeah. And he's got a couple podcasts. They're all great. Everything he produces, he writes, it's great. His TED Talk's great. Of course, like everything he does is just gold standard
yeah.
every time. Yeah. There have been some things that people have counteracted, mm-hmm. which just means you're doing something right. You're saying things that matter. Outliers was where kind of 10,000 hours to become a master at something mm-hmm. became popular. He certainly didn't invent that theory or thought, but yes, he brought it. It was the tipping point, for lack of a better word,
right.
where everybody now knows what that means, talks about it all of the time. And so many other things. Blink as well talks about kind of how we make snap decisions mm-hmm. and why we do that and why it's a good part of our personality, but also can get us in trouble and how we can avoid from making that our absolute decision, how we can use that to our advantage and what it means. And the same thing, even his newest book, Talking to Strangers, is a little bit, when I was reading it, I was a little bit conflicted at times. Sometimes it made me feel uncomfortable. I didn't know if I agreed. Mm. But overall, that's why I loved it, is because it made me think about things and the world around me and
yeah.
how we react to people and biases and decisions that we make. And all that stuff is so fascinating to me. And,
yes.
Yeah. And they're relatively short. Like I said, his writing style, so easy to digest. He's just great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because he is such a master of metacognition, of, you know, taking all these different little ideas and then putting them into, you know, Blink. And this, I think that's where it becomes so big and everyone can relate to it or see how it can affect them. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great.
Woo. All right. Well, here we are.
Here we go.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.